You know that feeling when you unbox something new and you just know it's a big deal?
Oh, yeah.
Well, think back, way back to October 2008. That's when the HTC Dream landed.
Or the T-Mobile G1, as most people in the US probably remember it.
Right, or the Era G1 over in Poland. This phone, it wasn't just another device, it was really the starting gun for Android.
Absolutely. And we've been digging into its story, mostly using its Wikipedia page as a guide, looking at, where it came from, what it could do, how people reacted, its whole journey.
And our goal today, our mission, if you like, is pretty clear. Let's figure out why the HTC Dream was so important, such a pivotal device.
Yeah, it stepped onto the scene when you had Symbian, BlackBerry OS, the iPhone OS just getting started.
Dominated,
It
really.
was dominated, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Dream offered something totally different, open.
Okay, so let's start right there, the beginning. Where did the Dream even come from?
So the story really starts a bit earlier, July 2005. That's when Google bought Android Inc.
Founded by Andy Rubin.
Exactly. Rubin and his team were all about mobile software. Google's idea was, well, to create this standard Linux-based OS that any phone maker could
Get
use.
everyone on the same page.
Kind of. Their first real internal project, the prototype, was codenamed Sooner.
Sooner. Okay. What was it like?
Picture a BlackBerry. Seriously, it was designed for messaging, had a physical QWERTY keyboard,
No touchscreen.
no touchscreen, very much in that BlackBerry mold.
Wow. So that's a world away from where Android ended up. What happened? What changed?
The big one, January 2007. Steve Jobs walks on stage and shows off the iPhone.
Ah, the iPhone moment.
That was it. Its design, that heavy focus on the touchscreen, it basically sent Google back to the drawing board. Almost immediately, they shifted focus to a new prototype,
Which was?
codenamed Dream. Now, this one did have a touchscreen, but crucially, it also kept a physical keyboard, one that slid out.
Interesting. A sliding keyboard after the iPhone reveal. Why stick with the physical keys? Seems almost counterintuitive.
Well, yeah, looking back, maybe. But at the time, remember, while the iPhone was making waves, a lot of people, especially business users, really preferred physical keys, that tactile feedback.
For serious typing.
Exactly. So the Android team thought, okay, let's give them both. Best of both worlds, or so they hoped.
Right, hedging their bets a bit. So, how does this Dream prototype become an actual product?
Things moved pretty fast then. November 2007, Google officially announces Android. And not just the OS, but the Open Handset Alliance, the OHA.
The oh, hey, right, that was a big deal.
Huge. It wasn't just Google. It was this coalition, hardware makers, software companies, carriers, all committing to these open standards for mobile.
And HTC was in there.
Front and center. HTC was already a major phone manufacturer, so they were a key partner. Google mentioned other Linux devices were being tested, but when it came down to it,
The HTC Dream was the one.
it was the only Android phone that actually launched in the US in 2008, and exclusively on T-Mobile, which is also interesting.
Yeah, just T-Mobile. What about the big guys?
Nope. Initially, Sprint, Verizon, AT&T, they had no plans for Android devices. It was all T-Mobile and the Dream.
Wow. Talk about putting your eggs in one basket. So, when could people actually buy it?
The official announcement came September 2008. Then the US launch, as the T-Mobile G1, happened in October 2008, but only in areas that had T-Mobile's 3G network.
Ah, so not everywhere at first.
Right. The wider US rollout was January 2009. The UK got it in November 2008, other parts of Europe, early 2009. Poland, as the Era G1, in March 2009. And even Canada got it on Rogers in June 2009.
A bit of a staggered global release, then. How long did it stick around, the G1?
T-Mobile stopped selling it in July 2010. Rogers in Canada pulled it even earlier, January 2010. Apparently, there was some kind of software bug with 911 calls.
Oh, that's not good.
No, but it did have a kind of follow-up, didn't it?
Yeah, the spiritual successor, the T-Mobile G2, also made by HTC.
And it kept that stock Android feel, and importantly, the slide-out keyboard.
Okay, so that's the backstory. Let's get into the phone itself, the hardware. What was
Yeah.
it like to actually hold and use?
Physically, it was distinctive, definitely. It had this soft-touch, matte plastic body. Came in white, black, and this sort of bronze color.
And the famous chin.
Yes, the chin. That angled bottom part, it housed five physical buttons: call, home, menu, back, and call. And right in the middle,
The trackball.
the clickable trackball. For a lot of the navigation, scrolling through lists, selecting things, that was your main tool.
Feels almost ancient now. A trackball on a phone. What about the screen?
It was a 3.2-inch capacitive touchscreen, LCD. Resolution was 300 and 480 pixels HVGA, they called it.
capacity. So like modern screens, it responded to finger touch, not pressure.
Exactly. 65,000 colors, but 180 pixels per inch. And the sliding mechanism was pretty unique. It sort of swung up and out on this curved hinge.
Revealing the keyboard.
Yep. A 5-row QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah.
And because the very first version of Android didn't actually have an on-screen keyboard.
Seriously. No virtual keyboard.
Not initially. So that physical keyboard was pretty much essential for typing anything.
Wow. Okay.
And here's something really interesting. The hardware itself could do multi-touch, pinch to zoom, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But Google deliberately disabled it in the software.
Disabled it? Why would they do that? Especially with the iPhone already out there showing off multi-touch.
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
It was never really fully explained. Maybe patent concerns. Maybe it wasn't smooth enough.
Yeah.
Who knows? But yeah, capable hardware, disabled feature.
Strange. What other hardware quirks were there?
Well, the big one for many was no standard headphone jack. No 3.5 millimeter port.
Ugh. Don't remind me. The adapter nightmare.
Exactly. You had to use an adapter with HTC's own XUSB port, which, okay, it was compatible with mini USB for charging and data, but for audio, adapter needed.
Painful.
So it had, what, a 3.15 megapixel camera on the back with autofocus. Pretty standard for the time.
Under the hood. Processor, memory.
It ran on a Qualcomm chip, the MSM7201A. An ARM11 processor clocked at 528 megahertz, paired with 192 megabytes of RAM.
192 megs of RAM. How times have changed.
Tell me about it. And only 256 megabytes of internal storage.
Whoa. That's like nothing.
Basically nothing. Whoa. But you could expand it with microSD card up to 16 gigs. So that helped.
That's crucial. Connectivity.
Pretty decent for 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Wi-Fi big, Bluetooth 2.0 with EDR, GPS actually. Yeah. Cellular was quad band GSM for basic calls and data. EDGE speeds.
And 3G.
Yep, dual band UMTS, HSDPA, HSUPIA for the faster 3G speeds, configured for US and European bands.
Okay, so some limitations like the headphone jack, the disabled multi-touch, the low internal storage, but also 3G, GPS, Wi-Fi, a mixed bag hardware-wise.
Definitely. Now the software, that's where things get really interesting. This was Android 1.0.
The very first taste, what was it like?
This is where you really saw the Google influence. The Dream was the first Android smartphone, period. Yeah. And it leaned heavily into Google services.
Like how?
Deep integration. Gmail was there, with push notifications a big deal then.
Mm-hmm.
Google Maps, Search, Google Talk for IM, YouTube, all baked in.
So it was plugged into Google right out of the box.
Absolutely. And it synced your contacts and calendar seamlessly with your Google account. Turn it on, sign in, and your stuff was just there. That was pretty revolutionary compared to, say, Symbian or Windows Mobile at the time.
A very Google-centric experience from day one. What else was on there?
You had a standard email app, too, for non-Gmail accounts, POP3 and IMP, another IM app. And the web browser used WebKit.
WebKit. That's the same engine Apple used for Safari, right?
Yep. Same core engine. So web rendering was actually pretty good for the era. And the notification system was quite clever.
How did that work?
Little icons would pop up in the status bar at the top.
Mm-hmm.
New email, message, system alert. You can then pull down the shade from the top to see more details.
The notification shade. That's still a core part of Android today.
It started right there on the Dream. And of course, the Android market.
The precursor to the Google Play Store, where you got your apps.
Exactly. Very early days for apps, but the store was there. Oh, and on the T-Mobile G1 specifically, it came preloaded with the Amazon MP3 app.
For buying music.
Yeah, buying and listening. An early partnership there.
So the beginnings of the app ecosystem we know now. Could you update the software, get new features?
You could, yes. The Dream did get updates.
Right.
But it wasn't always straightforward.
Oh.
Well, the last official version for the T-Mobile G1 in the U.S. was Android 1.6 Donut. That came out in October 2009.
Donut, right. I remembered the dessert names.
But the Rogers version up in Canada, it got stuck on the earlier version, Android 1.5 Cupcake.
Why the difference?
Rogers apparently said the donut update was only for Google-branded models, whatever that meant. It was an early sign of, well, the fragmentation that would become a big topic for Android down the road. Different carriers, different update schedules.
Yeah, that definitely became a thing. Okay, so Android's big selling point, one of them anyway, was being open source. How did that play out with the Dream?
Oh, it played out big time. Because Android was open source, the Dream immediately attracted hackers, tinkerers, developers, people who wanted to mess with the software.
Like root.
Exactly. Pretty quickly, someone found a software exploit to get root access. Basically, administrator privileges on the phone, like jailbreaking on iOS.
So you could get under the hood, bypass restrictions.
Totally. With root, people started doing things Google or HTC hadn't intended, like they found ways to turn on the hidden auto-rotation feature. And, importantly, they figured out how to re-enable multi-touch.
They reactivated the disabled multi-touch.
Through custom software kernels. Basically, replacing a core part of the operating system with a modified version that unlocked the hardware capability.
Wow. Users hacking their phones to get features the manufacturer turned off.
That's the power of open source, I guess.
Yeah.
And then things went even further once the phone's bootloader was figured out.
The bootloader? That's the software that starts the OS, right?
Right. Once that was dumped, essentially copied and analyzed it, opened the door to flashing completely custom versions of Android onto the phone. Custom firmware or custom ROMs.
So replacing the entire operating system.
Yeah. And around the same time, Google helped fuel this by releasing the Android Dev Phone 1.
What was that?
It was basically an HTC Dream, but it was sold SIM unlocked, hardware unlocked, and it came pre-rooted, specifically for developers to build and test apps without carrier restrictions.
Smart move. Give the developers the tools they need.
Absolutely. And it led to this explosion of community development. Websites like XDA developers became massive hubs.
XDA, yeah. Still huge today.
It really started back then. People sharing knowledge, building tools, and creating these custom ROMs. Projects like CyanogenMod got their start.
CyanogenMod, I remember them. They were huge for a while.
They were. Their goal was often to bring newer versions of Android, plus extra features and tweaks, to devices like the Dream long after T-Mobile or HTC stopped supporting them. It showed what users could do when they had control over the software.
And this whole modding scene, it had a lasting impact, didn't it? Beyond just the Dream.
Oh, definitely. Later on, as you mentioned, Android faced big challenges with fragmentation, carriers adding bloatware, manufacturers skinning the OS, slow updates.
Yeah, getting the latest Android version could take forever, if it happened at all.
Exactly. So the custom ROM community, born from devices like the Dream, became this really important, sometimes controversial, alternative. It gave users a way to get clean Android, newer features, keep older phones alive.
It's kind of amazing how passionate that community was.
Totally. As a final point on that, just to show the dedication, years after the Dream was obsolete, someone managed to port Android 4.1 Jelly Bean to it.
Jelly Bean. On that hardware. Did it even run?
Barely. It was more a proof of concept, apparently very slow. But the fact they could even do it, it just shows the legacy of that early modding spirit.
Incredible. Okay, so we've got the hardware, the software, the hacking. How did the critics, the tech press, actually react when the G1 launched?
It was generally described as mixed. The hardware design itself got decent marks. People liked the solid, robust feel.
Compared to the iPhone, maybe, which was all glass and metal.
Right. Engadget called the look charming retro future, like something from a 70s sci-fi movie set in 2038, which is kind of cool.
Hey, I can see that. What about the keyboard and screen?
The keyboard was seen as okay, functional, though maybe the keys were a bit small for some fingers. The screen was considered adequate, but maybe not great for watching videos. Contrast wasn't amazing, and 3.2 inches felt small quickly.
So, solid build, okay screen, decent keyboard. Where did the criticism come in?
Mostly aimed at Android itself. Remember, yeah. This was version 1.0. Reviewers saw it as, well, unfinished, kind of raw.
Lacking features.
Yeah, missing things users on other platforms might expect. The app selection in the market was tiny compared to the App Store, even then. No built-in multi-touch was a big one. And it lacked proper support for enterprise stuff, like Microsoft Exchange email syncing.
Okay, so definitely an early days vibe to the software.
Very much so.
Yep.
But at the same time, reviewers saw the promise. They liked the openness, the customization potential, the notification system got praise.
The pull-down shade.
Yep. Also, how Android showed you exactly what permissions an app needed before you installed it, that transparency was noted. And of course, the Google integration was seen as a major strength.
So, flaws, yes, but potential.
Loads of potential. That was the general feeling. TechRadar gave it 4.5 out of 5, called it stellar. Not quite an iPhone killer yet, but a sign of things to come.
High praise.
Engadget said it might not blow anyone's mind right away, but Android itself was exciting. GS Marino was maybe a bit more blunt.
Oh, yeah.
They said without Android, the hardware was just another average, smart, QWERTY messenger. They felt the G1 was far from perfect, but importantly, got the important things right.
Interesting takes. So critics were cautiously optimistic, maybe? How did actual buyers respond? Did people buy it?
Oh, they definitely did. T-Mobile sold over 1 million G1s in the U.S. by April 2009. That's pretty good for a new platform on just one carrier.
It's 1 million units.
Yeah.
That's significant.
And apparently, it made up something like two-thirds of all the 3G devices T-Mobile sold during that period. AdBomb, the ad network, estimated that by March 2009, Android, which was basically just the G1, then already had 6% market share in the U.S.
6%, just like that. Wow, so despite the rough edges, people were clearly interested in this new Android thing.
It seems so. Early adopters jumped on board. It clearly struck a chord.
So wrapping things up, the HTC Dream, the G1, the Era G1, whatever you called it, it really was a pivotal device.
No question. The first phone to run Android commercially. Its place in history is locked in.
We saw that unique hardware, the sliding keyboard, the chin, the trackball, innovative for its time, even with its quirks.
And the software Android 1.0. Limited at first, sure, but it evolved incredibly quickly, and you saw the core ideas already there. Notifications, Google integration, the market.
Plus, it sparked that whole modding community, which is still a huge part of Android culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And even though the reviews were mixed, people bought it. It showed Android was a real contender right from the start.
Okay, so here's a final thought to leave you with. Think about those early choices made with the HTC Dream. Physical keyboard versus touchscreen dominance. Open source versus closed ecosystems. How do those decisions, those trade-offs from way back in 2008, still echo in the phones we use today? What parts of that first G1 experience would seem completely alien or maybe surprisingly familiar to someone using a smartphone for the first time now?
That's a great question. You can definitely draw lines from the Dream to today's phones, both in what survived and what got left behind. Fascinating stuff.